He's the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Good evening, world. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. All righty. Well, it's warm here in Buffalo, as opposed to what it looks like in our, you know, in the opening there.
Yeah.
Like 80, it was like, I think it was close to 90 today. And,
Yes.
And there's nothing more fun than being in a play when it's 90 degrees outside.
Because it was probably close to that inside the theater, I would imagine.
Probably on stage with all those lights, probably about 100 or so. More heavy set people in all those polyester costumes were, you know, their tongues were like dragging on the stage as they would come off. And
well, I was at Disneyland on Monday last week where it was 100 degrees in Anaheim. Oh. So all the characters, can you imagine being dressed up? Those outfits at 100 degrees. Yeah, man. They were rotating them. They were rotating them pretty quickly. They did not keep them out there for very long. I mean, it was wild.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, I haven't, you know, I have the darker mustache tonight. I borrowed this from somebody.
You have to keep it for the rest of the, you know, for the rest of the series now.
Yeah,
for
probably.
Continuity.
Yeah, maybe. It's not easy maintaining one of these guys. And I got to say, you guys send me the weirdest stuff. Keep sending it. it's starting to take up a big pile over here on the shelf. I just finished up a run of Pirates of Penzance, and some of the stuff you guys wrote on Facebook was great. And it was just lots and lots and lots of fun. It's been a long time since I've done a play, and yeah, what do I pick? Gilbert and Sullivan. It was fun. Great cast. Some very talented people. Met somebody who I think is going to be a big, big star in opera. And we were very, very fortunate to have her, sing the mezzo soprano lead for that. And
well, that's cool.
You know, and the ensembles were great, and it was a funny show. It was a lot of fun. Maybe if Pat Sweeney and his family were there today. So if Pat, you know, gets back to Toronto in time and he joins us in the chat room, he'll tell us how, you know, it was really bad. But we have a great show tonight, and I'll try and stay awake because we just did four shows in 3.5 days. Our guest tonight, you know, as we say, you know, they're the nicest people in the broadcasting business and the voiceover business and all that sort of thing. The nicest guy in voiceover, God. Second is Bob Sauer.
Right, exactly.
And Bob Sauer is going to be joining us tonight, and he'll have some great stuff. He's always got something interesting to talk about, but we're going to talk a little bit about some of his workflow stuff and some working with long format things and a few other things, talking about how you deal with your clients. And so if you wanted to choose a night to watch us live, this was the night. Not that every other Sunday night isn't.
Yeah, this is a great opportunity to get advice from, you know, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. He's fantastic. So it's a good night to be here live, guys. And if you can't be here live and you're watching this in replay, we're still glad to have you. Any way we can have you, we're happy.
Right. But it's always more fun to be here and to be here in the chat room staring at us. Anyway.
Indeed.
Do I look a little too light there, or maybe it's just my computer here?
No, you look good. I'm a little dark compared to you.
Yeah, I can turn the lights down.
I can't seem to get myself quite that bright. But, yeah.
Is that any better? Okay.
That looks good.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, why don't we get the show on the road here? I see you've got some great stuff to talk about. I've got a tip of the week on, what are we talking about? We're going to talk about going paperless.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting. And then Bob will join us, and we'll also take your questions when Bob is in here. So when Bob is on, if you can give us some of your questions in the chat room, So it's like I'm like rocking the reels here with the reel-to-reel tape. Never ever remember doing that?
Never. I never had to do that.
Oh, you're a kid.
That's right. Never had to do that.
Yeah, but so throw your questions in there when Bob is on, because I'm sure he will love to answer your questions, because that's what he likes to do. So you're going to talk about booths tonight.
Yes, building or buying, because it just, you know, I usually pick my topic of the week by what's fresh in my brain or what has been most oft asked me in the last, you know, couple of days. And that was a topic that's come up a couple of times, and it's can be a challenging thing to tackle, and it comes up in forums a lot. It's just a real hot topic, so I thought maybe I could throw in my two cents. But obviously, if you've been in voiceover for a while, you've at least been in or seen or heard of these prefabricated booths, like the Whisper Room, for example, or VocalBooth.com, or GK, or the newcomer to the scene, Studio Bricks. And these booths are, you know, problem solvers for many of us that just can't find a better way to get a quiet space in our home. But is it right for you? Do you really need to buy one of these things? It's probably a really hot topic question. So basically, my opinion on whether you need one of these or not is based on a couple of things. One, where do you live? Are you in a really noisy area, in a noisy part of your city, off of a busy street, you know, and is it an apartment or something where you just can't get away from the noise from the outside? That would be one thing you have to ask yourself. Two, are you a renter or an owner? If you're renting, you're obviously not going to be busting out the drywall and knocking out windows and replacing windows and upgrading and soundproofing and all that stuff. There's not much soundproofing that's really practical you can do if you're not prepared to do some major, you know, upgrades to your space. There are some window retrofits you can do. There are a few things that you can do that are sort of somewhat Band-Aid fixes, but there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do if you're renting. So that would be number two. And then I would say number three is, which is worth it? Which is more important to you, your time or your money? And if you're going to have to build something because isolation is a serious problem, and the only way you're going to be able to get away with working in that home is by having a completely isolated space, then that's really the big question for yourself is, can you afford the time and the frustration and possible shortcomings of building something yourself, especially if you do it wrong the first time? Or is it really going to make more sense to buy something? So buying a booth, there is a distinct advantage, and that would be it has a resale value. So, you know, if you're not exactly sure if you're going to stay in this particular home for the long haul, you know, I talk to clients all the time. They're like, yeah, we're planning on being here for a couple of years, but not, you know, not for the long haul. Then I say, yeah, let's lean towards a booth. And if you're in a major market like LA, of course, it's a little easier to find one used. Although lately it seems like everybody's getting into voiceover because they are not easy to find on Craigslist lately, where I usually look. But you have to decide, is it something that you might want to be able to resell later? If you do custom construction, either it's permanently installed in the home, in other words, it's not going to move, or you build something freestanding that's nearly impossible to take apart. So that's another thing to consider. Either way you go, prefab or custom made, you're still going to have to deal with the same problems with acoustics, because either way, when you buy one out of the box, so to speak, they almost never have the right acoustical treatment in them. Even VocalBooth.com, which are booths designed for voiceover, don't have the greatest acoustical tuning. A lot of booth designers don't seem to understand how to control the low frequency range, you know, that area in your booth that gives it that muddy, boxy kind of honky sound. And so you always end up having to improve the acoustics anyway. So to me, that's not really a factor. Whether you build it, whether you buy it, you're still going to have to work on the acoustics anyhow. But building a booth can be really awesome when you have the space, the time, and the budget to do it, because you can build it to the size you want, the space that you need, and you can build in certain features that may not be available in a prefabricated booth, such as like really good ventilation. I think a lot of these prefabricated booths do not have the greatest ventilation. Very few of them do. in that regard of ventilation, and that's a hot topic right now, no pun intended, being the temperature that you're fighting with in Buffalo, too. But, you know, building a booth with good ventilation is really crucial, especially you audiobook people. You know, folks that just do short form that can walk in and walk out of the booth every time they're done a session or swing open the door for cool air. You know, if you're doing audiobooks, you're not going to be able to probably take that many breaks. You're going to need to work, you know, an hour to 2 hours at a time to be really productive. And so that booth's going to have extraordinarily good ventilation and silent ventilation. And the only booth I've seen so far, in my opinion, that had really actually has good ventilation is the more deluxe levels of the vocalbooth.com booth. I've helped a client or two with the gold or platinum level systems. And they actually have ventilation that seems to be able to cool the booth or keep the air circulating without creating noise. But every other system I've seen so far, there's a noise factor involved. So we always end up having to improve them. So, Dan, I know you're using a closet for your booth because you're in a relatively quiet neighborhood. You're able to tell the kids to shut up. You know.
When they're around.
When they're around. And what did you do in your case to deal with ventilation?
Well, I mean, because I'm on the second floor and I have an attic above me, I was able to concoct a rather sophisticated system using a 20-foot piece of insulated conduit. I think it was four-inch conduit connected to a duct fan, which moves 250 cubic feet per minute. Mm-hmm. Well, and we tried serpentining it, and it sounded like...
That's a high, pretty high velocity, yeah.
It is. So I concocted another thing using an HP printer box, because everybody has one of those, because those wear out every 6 months and you got to buy another one.
And the boxes last longer than the printers.
They really do, you know. So I took that, I built a baffle out of that, I put Oralex into it, and Eric Smith, the president of Oralex, was actually quite impressed with this, and... I put, you know, I made a muffler out of it with a connector on one end and one on the other. It's right above the booth, and it sucks 250 cubic feet of air out, and it's deadly silent. And so I'm replacing the air in there every 30 seconds or so.
That's the key. You can't
hear it. If you're on a second floor, if you have or you have a crawl space above you or something along those lines. That's really one of the ways to do it. It's highly specialized because of where I was, and I was able to do it. But it made a big, big difference, and it stays nice and cool in there. Yeah. And it's not sealed. Now, this summer, we're going to do another project in here where we're going to work with Resilient Channel and make this totally soundproof.
Oh, wow.
Which will be an interesting project to watch.
Holy smokes. You mean your closet booth or the entire room?
No, the closet booth.
The closet booth. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, it'll be a couple of days project. And I actually have a contractor friend who's like, "Oh, can I help?" I'm like, "Yes."
Yes, absolutely. You definitely want a very good friend who happens to have contractor skills to get into that kind of construction. Yeah. It's tough, especially in really cramped spaces to work in those confines and make everything fit together like a glove, and you don't have a lot of room for error, so
right. That's why I figured somebody who understands the concept of measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. So, you know, every space is different. And if you're not sure which is the right way to go, send us an audio sample. We'll kind of give you an idea of the severity, the noise, the frequency ranges you're dealing with. Because sometimes I actually had a client come up this week, and I'll wrap it up after this. But he already has a whisper room. But they're like, "I need to soundproof the whisper room even more." So the first thing I always ask is, well, what kind of frequency range are you dealing with? And is it the stuff that makes big wavy lines in the waveform when you're not speaking? Then that's low frequency or rumble, in which case none of these prefabricated booths can get rid of all of that. Just can't do it. They're not heavy enough, dense enough to stop all that. So I usually say, did you try a high-pass filter? Did you try filtering out the low frequencies? And you know, a lot of times people go, "No, I didn't think of that." You'd be amazed at how cheap a fix that can be. I have a very prominent promo voice actor who has a double, and that has the enhanced whisper room, the top of the line, but it's in a industrial building, And when the air conditioning is on, which is all the time, because it's in Calabasas in the valley where it's probably 100 degrees right now, he gets this nasty, like 50, 60 hertz hum in that booth. I mean, it's like, it's really bad. And so we used every high pass filter we could find, from microphone to preamp, everywhere in the chain, to get rid of that and made it usable, you know. But you can't build that noise out of the booth without serious, serious construction. So don't even try.
Yeah. I'm of the opinion that all of these booths, although I'm sure more of them are coming out now, they were really never designed for doing voiceover. They were really designed for musician isolation.
Whisper room for sure, yeah.
Right. I mean, certainly to not isolate them from an orchestra so much as to isolate them from everybody else.
For rehearsal spaces.
For rehearsal spaces, stuff
like
that. Yeah,
exactly.
So acoustically, they suck.
Yeah, they need a lot of help. And actually, Dan's studio suit is a really good retrofit. If you have a whisper room or a booth that just is kind of boxy sounding, you throw that studio suit up, it really actually does work. It really does. It controls that critical 100 hertz to 200 hertz range that 2-inch foam can't handle, you know, and it does it really well. So
yeah, and I know why. I mean, I theorize why. It was, like I said, it was a complete accident that I found this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it does. It really eliminates the need for bass traps, and we're installing more and more and more of them, and people want them, and a lot of people saw it at FAF Camp and want it.
Cool.
So we have them.
Cool, man.
Anyway,
I'm buying one from you next week, I think.
Yes,
I need one for somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, outstanding. Yeah, it's and in the winter, it'll keep you nice and warm, too.
That's right. It's insulation. Anyway, it does that.
That's right.
All right.
Anyway, all right. Well, that's fascinating stuff, because I think people are always asking about booths. Well, we got more stuff to talk about. We've got announcements. We have Bob Sauer. I mean, you can't ask for a better show than that. So stay right where you are, and we'll be right back, and we'll keep going here with East West Audio Body Shop. Thanks for coming.
Are you planning on doing tonight? I thought so. Now back to East West Audio Body Shop with Dan and George.
All right, we're back here in East West Audio Body Shop, and Bob Sauer is going to be with us in just a little bit. I know you're all just tuning in to see Bob, and because he's just great to listen to. Just knows what he's talking about. But we got stuff to talk about here, too, because right now...
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
Gotta have your hand on the pot there.
It was playing, but you just didn't hear it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
So all you guys heard it. I didn't hear it till the end there. All right, what do we got this week? Well, what's this first one here? Audiobook Gold Rush.
Yeah, this just popped up. Julie Williams has put this webinar together. It's in support of a voice actor actually named Nicole Nielsen. 100% of the proceeds benefit voice actor talent Nicole Nielsen, who has been stricken with an incurable disease, and her needs are staggering. So Pat Fraley and Scott Brick being, the guy, the mensches that they are doing this webinar called the 2013 Audiobook Gold Rush. And it's Tuesday, May 21st, so it's just coming up this week from 6 to 7:30 Pacific. Same exact time slot as our show, but a different day, so that's good. And so if you're interested in that, we will put the link somewhere. Anyway, we'll make sure it's we'll put it in the Facebook group. We'll plug it all over the place, but we'll make sure you guys don't miss it. But the link is actually voice-overwebinars.com/audiobook_goldrush.html. That rolls right off the tongue. So I'll stick it in the chat room for you guys too.
Almost like a modern major general.
Exactly.
All right. Also, finally, now we know this is working now, right?
With this what?
The survey.
Oh yeah, the survey is definitely alive and kicking. We've probably had at least 25 people fill it out so far.
All right. We want to hear from you. We want to know what we can do to make this show better. Not that it isn't already fantastic. It is definitely the best show on Home Voiceover Studios on Sunday night on Ustream. There's no question about it.
Exactly.
We
want
to know what we can do to make it better. So, you know, but obviously somebody likes it because you keep showing up every week. But if you would take the survey and give us some suggestions, we want to be, you know, we want to be able to, you know, help you out and give you what you want, because that's why we're here.
Yeah, we want to help us sculpt the future of the show, you know, make it better.
So we're going to have the link in our Facebook page, and
it's already everywhere. It's on Facebook wall, the Facebook page, it's everywhere. The profile, Google+, Twitter. I blanketed the net with it. So if you haven't seen it by now, you haven't been online.
It's everywhere. Okay. See, now you're too old. You're too young to remember Chicken Man. But maybe
actually, I don't remember Chicken Man. Banana Man, though.
Yeah, no. Dick Orkin, Chicken Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, the only reason I know who he is was from Voice 2010?
Yes.
Was it 2010? Him. Yeah.
Yes. Actually, got to sit down and have dinner with him. It was great. Oh, he was a hero of mine. And I'm like, it's Dick Orkin.
That's awesome.
Yes. Let's see here. We need to thank our sponsors, of course, Harlan and VoiceOver Extra, for all the great stuff that they do, and you'll hear from them later on. eWeb's memberships, still $39.95 a month. Unlimited access to Dan and George, or George and Dan, depending on your preference.
That's right. You can send us files to listen to. You can send us pictures of your studio. We can send you back notes and diagrams and whatever. It's sort of a virtual membership, so we can handle things over email more really efficiently with you guys. So.
Yes, and we do give marital advice, because trust me, we know a lot about that.
It comes up.
It does.
Yeah, I think about a third of the clients I work with, I feel like I'm a counselor.
Yeah, well, so. I mean, VoiceOver at home is VoiceOver at home. They overlap.
We get it.
I'll bet you Bob can talk about that too.
But oh yeah,
Chris, he has all his family involved in the business.
He's smart, man.
Yeah, so
they're grown up enough that, you know, your kids are getting close to that age, right?
How do you think I was able to do a play? One can drive, the other can take care of himself. Hon, we're going to go do a show.
Nice.
Off we went.
That's great.
Let's see here. Studio Suit. Well, we were just talking about Studio Suit. No need to update it. The fact is, it's there. It's available. I have to make a commercial, so you guys need to do it. Go over to VoiceOver Studio, VOStudioSuit.com is the website for Studio Suit. You can see the videos, hear for yourself what this stuff does. No more on that for now. Also, like us on Facebook. Now, the Facebook page we want you to go to, if you're already on the East West one word Audio Body Shop one word website of a Facebook page, we now have an eWebs group page. Can't they just like anything they want? I mean,
well, the thing is I have to remember to put stuff on every one of those places to make sure everybody sees it. It's a lot of work, but anyway, we're trying to move everybody to the fan page, and so please like us. Right. We'd really appreciate it.
Right. So, you know, it's like Yeah. Okay. Also, yes. And follow us on Twitter at EWABS_show and subscribe on YouTube. The podcast version is now on iTunes. I know that for a fact. I've actually seen it.
It is. It's a few episodes behind because we ran out of server space. So I'm going to fix that up pretty soon so we can get the latest ones up there. And I've been polishing up the website a little bit, getting a little bit of a spit shine, trying to keep it updated. And so head on over there. You might see a few things that are new to you if you haven't been on there in a while. What else is new? Oh yeah, there's a link on the website called YouTube. So if you click on the YouTube link at the top, it takes you just to an embedded playlist of every show. So it is literally every show we've ever done, and you can click on the playlist viewer at the bottom of the screen and browse through all 94, 95 episodes. So that's kind of nifty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. And if you want to donate to help us out, because if you've ever been here when we had the free version of Ustream, we get commercials. We need your help because it's not free to put on this show.
Those dang commercials.
Now, granted, there are people making a living doing the voices for those commercials.
Granted, but, yes. But they come in on without our permission when we don't want them to.
You know, unless Ford wants to give us a pile of money, I don't want them on there. So
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, if you guys can help us out, you just click the donate button right above George's head there if you're in the EWABS page. And we will graciously accept. And it is big, big help.
Thanks, everybody.
Yes. All right. Time for my tip of the week. It's an important one. It's about the environment.
That's right. Let's jump right in.
As modern-day voice actors with home studios, I think we need to set an example to be in the forefront of being green and environmentally friendly. We want to take care of our world and leave it to our children better than we found it.
One way is to go paperless and save our friends, the trees.
Okay, aside from the healthy benefits to our planet, it also makes sense from a business perspective. With the tons of audition scripts I used to go through and the long-format voice projects, paper started to pile up. I used to just throw it all in the same pile until one day I noticed that the pile was actually almost about 3 feet tall and it was clogging up my desk and just about everywhere else. That's when I decided to go paperless and start using a remote screen. Okay, I'm sure many of you have already done this. But for those of you who haven't or haven't tried yet, it's actually pretty simple. All you really need is an extra flat-screen monitor. Your computer, if it's fairly new, like in the last 5 years, should give you the ability to use dual monitors. On Macs and most laptops, it's a standard feature. They make adapters for all types of connections. They've really come down in price over the past few years. And by using an old monitor and putting it back to use, you're also helping to save the planet. All you have to do is mount it at the height you want against the wall behind your mic, using a standard wall mount. Simply run an extra long monitor cable to it. Setting it up on a Mac is one step. Take it out of the mirror mode in the display preferences. Then all you have to do is slide the script from one screen to the other and scroll it with a wireless mouse. Perfect for doing long format. Never a page to turn. Okay, what about marking a script? Well, for short scripts, our good friend John Taylor came up with this gem. Use a clear plastic sheet of overhead projector slides taped to the monitor and a dry erase pen. Or here's something I bet you didn't think about. Why not just use the effects that you have in Word or your word processing to make arrows or to come up with different ways of doing it? You can draw lines. You can place them anywhere you want. Or, here's a good one. Why not try using a highlight and come up with your own code for what those particular highlights mean? It's a different way of looking at things. Even more obvious, an iPad's going to replace all this stuff in the very near future. If you got one, use it. You'll probably be recording on that iPad or tablet the next few years anyway.
So go paperless, save the forests and our planet. And that's my tip of the week.
Yeah, the weather here sure changes a lot. I mean, 2 weeks ago, it was like 80 degrees. And then it was like, it was actually snowed the other day.
Did it really?
It really. And then it was 80 degrees again today. Oh, what is going on? Well, at least the weather here is never dull. Unlike Southern California, where it's always 70 and sunny.
It's always the same.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Humdrum.
Well, all right. Well,
so, I mean, you're still using the, are you using iPad these days mostly for script reading?
No, I still have my screen.
Using the dual
there.
Screen. Okay.
I'm using the dual screen because I use my iPad for playing crazy, you know, or for playing Angry Birds. That's what it's for. And reading my mail in the morning. But
yeah.
No, I've got this, you know, I've got a nice mirrored screen system in there and, you know, with a magic mouse scrolling. And remember, you can also bring the controls from your software, your recording software, in there too,
right,
in case you want to, you know, you want to watch your levels and stuff like that, which you shouldn't be doing because you're supposed to be reading the copy.
Exactly. I had to remind somebody that the other day. Well, I can't see my screen now. I'm like, you don't need to. You're acting.
Acting.
All right. Well, I was going to mention one thing. The reason why Dan says to use non-mirror mode is unless your two monitors are exactly the same resolution, like same size, dimensions, aspect ratio or whatever, if you don't do non-mirror mode, then one monitor, the image is going to be stretched or letterboxed or something that's not so desirable. So if you turn off mirror mode so that the second monitor is a different display, you get around that problem. So that's why you just drag stuff to the other screen. So thought I'd mention that.
That is correct. Very good.
VO Studio Tech. Recording made simple.
Hi, I'm Peter McHugh.
This is Jim Tasker from Los Angeles, California.
Hi, this is Bill Ratner in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Rummel here in Yorba Linda, California.
Hi, my name is Rick Wasserman.
Hi, this is Tom Kane.
Hi, my name is Vanessa Marshall.
Hi, my name is Zurich.
Hi, I'm Mary McKittrick.
Randy Thomas chiming in.
Hi, this is Joe Szymanski.
Hey, this is Rick Robles.
Hi, my name is John Patrick Armstrong.
I was turned on to George by none other than Don LaFontaine, who always swore by his health.
George is absolutely awesome.
ISDN, Source Connect, Phone Patch, FTP, you name it, Georgia set it up.
It's really the best thing I've ever done for myself. I feel free, safe, fearless, like anything is possible in here.
Unless you like to look for opportunities to waste time, call George.
And he did all of that, long distance over the phone and the internet.
I'm very happy with George, and I cherish him.
Thanks, George. You make it easy.
And now, back to East West Audio Body Shop, where every week, it's Apollo 13.
Yep, and this week is no different
from
exception.
Any other week.
No exception. Yeah, I mean, gee whiz. And what caused that, George? What did you do?
I believe it was because I plugged my phone in to the USB cable that's hooked to my computer, and I think that's what crashed Ustream.
It's like your computer went, what? What? You want me to do more?
What was that?
Jeez.
Yeah, all right,
it is time for our super-duper special guest, and let's welcome him in from the wilds of Pennsylvania. Well, not that wild. Bob Sauer, welcome to East West Audio Potty Shop.
Hi, Dan, and everybody, including George, of course.
Hey, Bob.
Now, you were immediately mentioning, since we were talking about booths and stuff like that, you had some thoughts on that?
Well, yes. Primarily just to say, and this probably is connected at least somewhat to some of the other things that we're going to talk about today that have to do with the way I structure and organize my workflow. But I prefer to have a single room in which I do everything. So I do not have a booth and then a place where I do my editing and all of that. I have everything. In fact, you're looking at it here behind me over there. Is one of the bass traps that I built using OC705. That's in it because the way the computer is angled, you're actually looking at the far corner of my studio. So I have a desk that I bought from IKEA that holds two monitors over here is my workstation. You can't see it on the screen, but mm-hmm. and of course the microphone's up there. Lights scattered around the room. They're all LED lights, so they're completely silent and they don't put out a lot of heat. And the ventilation thing is one thing that I've never particularly had to deal with. The reason for that is because my studio is built in the basement of an external garage.
Ah.
So it's not in my house. In fact, we bought this property specifically because it had a six-car external garage as well as a two-car built in. And four are upstairs, four of the spaces for the garage, and then two are down here in the basement where I am. But there's only one garage door, even though there's space for two cars, or there was before we built the studio.
Yeah.
And so what we did is we put a wall up that separated the two halves of the garage. And then inside of the room that we created out of half of that garage, we built this studio that is 10 feet by 8 feet.
Wow.
So there's, and we made, we used regular wood 2x4s, two layers of 5/8 inch drywall on the outside with green glue in between, two layers of 5/8 inch drywall on the inside with green glue in between. And we had polyurethane foam insulation blown into the ceiling of the garage. That covers the whole of the basement of the garage, not just this part where the studio is. And my dad came down from Minnesota. He's been rehabbing houses for years, so he's a very handy carpenter.
And where are you again, for those that don't know what part of the world?
I'm in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, right.
In the south suburbs of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. So the basement is nice and cool, even in the summertime. I do have a air conditioner that's located outside of the booth, but inside of this room that we created. So when things get really hot in the hottest part of the summer, I'll run that air conditioner, which is quiet enough that if I'm just doing a quick audition or whatever, I can even leave it running while I'm working. When I'm working on an audiobook or another long form thing, I will generally shut it off. And then just, you know, I take a break every hour or so when I'm working anyway.
So you work what you're blessed with. In your case, you had a basement in a separate building, which is about as good as you're going to imagine. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is when you're walking down the stairs from the upstairs part, because the entrance, the simplest entrance from the house into the garage where the studio is located is up on the main floor, the main floor of the garage, because the basement of the house comes straight out across the driveway to where the garage is. Mm. And when you're walking down the stairs from that main level of the garage down to the basement area where the studio is located, there is a discernible temperature shift halfway down.
Oh, yeah.
So for the vast majority of the year, I don't have to do anything about cooling. There's only a month or two in the summertime where I need to worry about running the cooling at all.
Yep.
And in the wintertime, there's only a couple of months where just the sheer, frankly, hot air coming out of my mouth doesn't keep the booth warm enough. You know, my just being in here, I'm generating a certain amount of heat. So most of the winter, but I have a small, quiet, radiant space heater that sits over in the corner, and it has two modes, one with a fan, one without.
Yeah.
So when I need to warm up the room, I just turn it on low and let it run. Again, it's quiet enough that for something quick, I can just run it even when I'm working. For long form stuff, I'll generally shut it off. But what I'll do is I'll run it for a half an hour, 45 minutes before I start working. Then once I start talking, the room doesn't cool off very much.
Right.
Yeah, so. That's the great thing about basements. I was in the basement for like 10 years, and it's like, it's 85, 90 degrees outside. I'm going to work. And it was nice and cool down there. And then, of course, in the winter, and you know, when you get towards spring, it gets kind of damp and kind of cold down there, and that's why you need the heaters and stuff.
Well, we've got the floor separated from there's two layers of moisture barrier between me and the concrete floor here, so it does not get damp in here at all. It's fabulous. But anyway, the biggest reason why I wanted to build is because I wanted a room big enough to work in that wasn't going to involve, I mean, you know, in order to buy a booth that was big enough for me to do everything in, would be enormously way more. I think all told, everything including buying way more green glue than I needed. I still have two cases of green glue tubes. By the way, if either of you guys would like to take some off my hands or anybody
I'm
else.
I'm going to need some this summer.
Okay. So. Well, I'll be happy to sell some to you. It's still sealed in the case.
Cool.
But anyway, even with everything that I spent on all of that, I think it was maybe $4,500, maybe $5,000 for everything, including the money to spend. My dad helped me, and I hired a carpenter that I was a friend of mine here in the area.
Great.
Even when I hire friends, I usually pay them if they're giving me professional services, because I think it's, you know,
it's a good
I would
idea.
Expect the reverse if they ask me to do
that's how they stay friends
for them. Yes, exactly. you work with them on a professional level. So anyway, and a big part of the reason, by the way, this comes back to the other thing I wanted to mention that you guys were just talking about, and that comes to your tip, Dan. I've been working paperless since 1991. I've had my own studio since 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And now, keep in mind, in 91, I wasn't getting tons of stuff over the internet, or back then it was CompuServe that I was a member of. You know, most of the work that I was doing that was just plain voiceovers was in somebody else's studio, some professional studio somewhere. And in that case, of course, I had to read the paper because that's what they gave me. But in my own studio, working on the stuff that I wrote it on the computer screen, and that's a big part of how I developed this process of having everything all in front of me, because I've been reading off the computer screen. I don't have a separate monitor. I'm just using the main monitor that I use. The one that's where the camera is located is actually my Skype / Source Connect / whatever, the secondary computer. So I actually have two here in the studio, one with... like I said, with Skype stuff, and that way I don't have to put Skype or anything else on my main workstation. It's just my workstation, and of course I do email on it.
Mm-hmm.
All keep right, that all well, separate.
It's a smart idea to keep those systems separate, because I'm milking every last bit of power out of my Mac Mini to do this whole show. I'm doing everything on one computer, and that's because I'm crazy like that. But you know,
well, I actually found it running Skype on the same computer. When I switched to an HD camera, which is what I'm using tonight, it actually degraded the audio quality of my recording slightly.
Wow.
I could hear it. That was when I switched to having a second computer in the studio, because I just, you know, I'm not going to send out stuff that's second rate.
Skype uses a lot of power.
It does. Well, I have found if you're doing a Skype session, though, if you just don't use the video, that tends to...
Correct.
That,
it does,
that does help a lot.
It helps a lot, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And besides, you don't want them seeing... They don't need to see where the sausage is made. They just need to hear the sausage.
I usually turn the camera on anyway, because it's polite.
Yeah. That's true. So. Yeah. But then we go, can I turn it off so the sound's a little bit better? Anyway, all right, well, let's talk about some of the stuff that I know, you know, those of us that have met you at FAFCON and FAFCamp and stuff like that, you give some great talks about dealing with clients and how do you create really good client relationships, because we're business people. I mean, we're voice actors and and agents find us work and we find work on our own. But once we find work on our own, how do you keep a client? How do you keep them coming back to the well?
Well, I think it's fair to say there is no single answer or, you know, magic bullet that you can use. But a few things that I try to do. First of all, my last name is Sauer. I try as best as I can to leave a sweet taste in the mouth of every one of my clients. And I actually think of it in those terms. I don't want them to associate the idea of Sauer with me, except that it happens to be my name. And so I'm doing everything I can all the time to not just meet but exceed deadlines, to deliver audio that is of absolutely impeccable quality. That means that even if they don't insist on it being edited, unless they insist on it being raw, I give it to them, you know, cleaned up. I keep a raw copy just in case they say, wait a minute, what happened to all the raw audio? But, you know, if they say, these are the takes that we like, even if they don't ask me for only the good takes, I'll send them a version of it that has only the good takes. Or I have a client in Europe that hires me fairly frequently to do movie trailer and TV promo work, where they want an American voice on those kinds of things. And generally what I'll do is give them two versions, one that's already processed with all the compression and multi-band compression and all of that sort of thing, so that it sounds like it's finished audio ready to go, as well as a version that's dry and unprocessed. Because sometimes if they're video people primarily, they don't want to deal with all the audio processing, but they want it to sound like, you know, something close to a real movie trailer or promo. And so this way they don't have to do that themselves. They have it. So going above and beyond expectations, is, you know, sort of the beginning process of that. And then the other thing, I call it loving your clients. And by that, I mean, you choose to treat them like you would a good friend or a family member, at least one you like and want to get along with. and recognize that it's probably a one-way experience. You're going to love them. They're not necessarily going to love you back. But by choosing an attitude of love to treat towards them, it affects the way you relate to them. It affects the way you respond to them. It affects the entire interaction. Even if they can't put their finger on it, you become somebody that they want to work with again because you make life simpler for them. In fact, a number of years ago, I realized that I'm not really in the voiceover business. I'm in the problem-solving business. And by helping to solve people's problems, whether it's referring to somebody else because maybe I'm not the right voice, or whether it's an example is a client that is in Texas a few years ago had a their company was featured in an article in a local newspaper here in Pittsburgh. And when we were talking on the phone one day, they mentioned how nice it would be to have a copy of the paper. They didn't ask me to get it for them. They just mentioned that, gee, I wish not just the online copy of the article, but I wish I had a copy and a hard copy. So I went to the store, bought them a copy of the newspaper, put it in a package and sent it off to them. You know, being helpful, being going above and beyond. All of those kinds of things help you to be memorable. And, you know, I, as much as I enjoy getting an audition from one of my favorite agents, what I really love is getting an email that says, "Dear Bob, we would like to pay you a large sum of money. Would you please read the attached script for us?" That's the stuff that, you know, that's the goose that laid the golden eggs. And I want to do everything I can to keep that going on.
Yeah, it's always a matter of, you know, when you're dealing with people, it's the golden rule always applies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and a lot of that goes to the type of people you choose to work with too. Now, I have a feeling that if someone hires you, you're going to treat them the same as you treat everybody else, even if they're being somewhat stingy or
whatever. One of my cardinal rules is you never have to work for a jerk twice.
Right.
Good boy.
You know, the first time you work for somebody, you don't know whether they're going to turn out to be a jerk or not.
Sure.
But, you know, once you learn that, and again, I think it's imperative that you not sink to their level. You behave in as professional and kind and decent a way as you possibly can, even if they turn out to be a jerk. And the thing is, you never know. Maybe they're just having a really bad day. Maybe there's been some colossal, you know, maybe they just found out mom is sick or the kids are sick or who knows, you know, the company's about to go bankrupt. Who knows what it is that's going on that causes the jerkish behavior.
Right.
But if somebody turns out to genuinely be, you know, not a decent person, there's absolutely no reason to keep working for them.
You know, right.
Tell them no.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll find that if someone, the problems will come from the lack of knowledge of the client, of knowing exactly how you do what you do. And some of that has to do with educating your client. Well, here's how I can do this. Here's how I can make your life easier. Here's how I can save you money in the process. And that's, you know, that's treating them sweetly. That's when they hear that, they're like, that's sweet. Yeah. Anyway. Again,
solving problems.
Absolutely. It's always any business is a problem solving thing, especially when you're talking production and things like that. How can we do this? How can we do it better? Boom, boom, boom. And how can I deliver the service better to your client? Client relationships are the most important thing I think that most of us should really do, and be careful about them and those sorts of things. But you do a lot of audiobooks. Let's shift gears a little bit on that.
Sure.
Now I've taken a slight hiatus from audiobooks. I have my attitudes about it right now. I'm waiting for the marketplace to settle itself down. What are your thoughts on audiobooks? And give us your take on all of this.
Well, first of all, I love telling stories, which is why I typify myself as a storyteller rather than just a voiceover person. Nothing wrong, by the way, with anybody who wants to call themselves a voice actor or whatever. That's it. It's not it. I like being somewhere slightly off the beaten path. So I wanted to find some other way to describe what I do. And the word that kept coming up, or the term that kept coming up over and over and over again for the work that I was booking and so forth, was a storyteller style or that kind of thing. So that came, you know, and then I love telling stories. So coming back to audiobooks, I love telling long stories as much as or more than I like telling short stories. Because after all, when you're telling a short story, it's done fairly quickly and then you're done with it. So I really enjoy that process of telling a long story. I love doing audiobooks and do them as often as I can. I've done 14, I think, and I'm working on one right now that's going to take me most of the year. It's 1,100 pages of very dense theological treatise from John Calvin. But anyway, I love doing that sort of thing. And a number of years ago, when I first started working on them, I was working at a full-time. I was in a corporate job. I was also working full-time doing voiceovers. And I wanted to get started doing audiobooks because, again, I enjoy telling stories. And so I realized fairly quickly that I, by myself, one little guy with two essentially full-time jobs already, was not going to have time to get all of this stuff done. At around this same time, I was also getting more and more e-learning and other kind of long-form corporate work. And so I realized I've got to find some way to make sure that what I read is done correctly from beginning to end. I can usually catch a lot of the mistakes that I make when I'm recording, but I don't catch them all. I'll substitute a word, I'll leave a word out, I'll add a word. I hope that I'm not unique in that. I suspect that I might not be the only voiceover person ever to do any of those things.
You just believe it's not written in stone.
No, I want to do them exactly right, but I'm not capable of doing them perfectly all the way through from beginning to end every time, or catching all of my own mistakes. So I started using my wife and one of my kids, my oldest son, Eric, to help direct when I was recording. And then Eric expressed some interest in learning how to do audio editing, so I began teaching him how to do that. And right about that time, it was the summer between his sophomore and junior years of high school, I got an audiobook project in which I was not the narrator, I was the editor. And but it was from a publishing company that I really wanted to work with, and it was a project for whom I'd already done one bit of narration, so I wanted to keep the relationship going. So, of course, I said yes to the editing job. But I knew that with the time frame that they needed it done, there was no way I was going to get it all finished, so particularly because I was still working full-time in my corporate job. So I asked my son if he would be willing to take some of it on. We started out with him watching me while I edited a chapter. Then I watched him while he edited a chapter. And then I double-checked his work when he edited a chapter on his own. And after that, I was confident that he could handle what needed to be done, and he began editing for me. And that's how I got started on this whole process of bringing my my kids and my wife occasionally into this project. And now I even have a few friends who, when they're in, you know, quiet times between other projects or whatever, I'll also hire them to help me out with things, directing or editing. And last fall, for example, in addition to an ongoing series of radio imaging clients and corporate and e-learning projects and so forth, I had 7 audiobooks going all at the same time in 1 6-week period. And we got them all done ahead of schedule. But the way we did that was, you know, I would finish a chapter, I would give it to my son or my daughter to edit, and I would go on to record the next chapter. And as soon as I was done with that one, I would pass it along. And, you know, we just, the one thing that I have to do is the actual narration. everything else that's part of providing voiceovers can be done by somebody else, assuming that they're competent. And,
right.
you know, of course, I make sure that I'm only hiring people who are competent.
Right.
And so, you know, we would just work our way through. And in a typical day during a season like that, I'm in the studio actually recording on mics somewhere between 6 and 8 hours a day and taking breaks every hour. Typically what I'll do is I'll record for an hour. I'll take a 10 minute break. I'll record for another hour. Then I'll go and take a nap for 20 minutes. And then I'll come back in the studio, record for another hour, and occasionally another hour beyond that. And then I'll break for lunch and take another nap after lunch is done. And then I'll get back in the studio and do the same thing through the afternoon. Occasionally, I'd even go back in the studio work in the evening. You know, a lot depends on how tight the deadlines are.
Right.
And how many things we have to get done. But, you know, it takes longer to edit than it does. Now, that comes back to another thing. I know a lot of people do punch and roll these days. I find, this is just me, it throws me, when I have to stop and move the cursor and do all of that. I've got Pro Tools, I use it all the time. So I can do punch and roll, but I find that it takes me out of my performance. It's way too hard for me to keep with the flow of the storytelling. Anybody who can do it, I think very highly of you, and I'm proud of you for being able to do it, and good for you, but I can't. If I'm going to tell the story, I got to just concentrate on the story and do it. And when I make a mistake, I just pick up the sentence or the phrase and you know, and go on.
Right.
And so we record it from beginning to end, and then we edit it in typically in real time. And the workflow for us mostly is I'll record, I'll give it to Eric to edit, and then I'll give it to Karen to proof. And then I'll do whatever pickups are found, and then we deliver the finished things. If they want it mastered, I'll do the mastering before I send it off. If they want it unmastered, I just send it directly in after I've done the pickups.
Right. What type of books have you been working on lately? I mean, you were talking about, you know, some religious material, but what
sure. The one that I'm currently working on right now is John Calvin's Institutes of the Christian Religion, which, as I said, is about 1,100 pages of very dense 16th century theology. But that's not what I do most of the time. I do significantly prefer nonfiction, and there's two reasons for that. One is because I'm not a particularly gifted character guy. I mean, from my days of being a sidekick on morning radio, I've got Ole Olsen, a goofy Swedish guy, and a couple of other things like that. But none of that makes any sense in the context of an audiobook. I mean, unless there's some Swedish chef who makes an appearance in an audiobook. That's a pretty
weird Muppets
thing.
Documentary. Yeah,
exactly. But other than that, you know, I'm not a character guy. I've done some fiction, and it's okay. You know, I can find ways to create what needs to be done, but I significantly prefer nonfiction specifically because there aren't characters involved. And the other reason is because, yes, you have to look up unusual terminology and words and jargon and that kind of thing. But I find, again, you know, if it's a situation where I run into something like that, I'll just let the recorder roll. You know, it's just bits on the hard drive. What difference does it make? And Google it up and, you know, or refer to one of the various resources that are available on the net and find the answer and then back up a little ways and pick up again and go. So I can read them cold. And most of the time, even with having to stop occasionally and look things up, I can get done much quicker than if I had to pre-read the whole thing and decide which character voices are going to go with which characters and all of that sort of thing, like I would with fiction.
Right.
I have one time done a fiction book that I didn't pre-read. Never again. So let's just say.
Yeah. Now, you do a lot of other long form stuff. I mean,
I do.
The majority, I think, of work really in our business is in medium to long format stuff that is nonfiction, business oriented, business to business, promotional stuff, things along those lines. That is e-learning is humongous. I mean, we all do it. And what's your workflow for that type of stuff? It's probably a little bit different than audiobooks.
Yeah, it's in fact, really for me at least, my approach to audiobooks grew out of the fact that I was already doing a lot of long form corporate and training kinds of things. Again, I always hire a director. I mean, I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times in the last 10 years that I've done a long form project without a director. And I've regretted it every time because it's just so many more pickups. So I always hire somebody to direct me, either a member of my family or a friend, somebody that I know is really meticulous. My mom has turned out to be a really superb director. She was involved in hospital administration and bookkeeping for all of my years when I was growing up, and even years and years after that until she retired a few years ago. So she's very detailed and meticulous. And so we connect on Skype just like we're talking here now. And, you know, she'll sit there and she'll have a copy of the script that I'm working on and will read along with me. And she'll say, Bob, that should be, you know, or whatever at the point where I make a mistake. And she is very, very good. My daughter is also extremely good at directing. And so I will often ask her, particularly if it's something that needs to be really word perfect and that kind of thing. And then, you know, between Karen, my daughter, and Eric, my son, my oldest son, you know, they get the editing done. And then once I finish with a batch of things, I plunge into the editing as well so that we get it all finished.
Right. And really with long format material, if you can turn that stuff around really fast, you know, clients will come back to you over and over again.
Yeah.
And give you lots more.
Yeah. Beating the deadlines is really helpful. And, you know, I've got one client out on the West Coast that I do a lot of work for. They are involved in doing training videos for the paving industry. In fact, George, in your part of the world, if you work in the paving industry, you're probably sick of my voice by now, because I've done everything from how to be a flagger, you know, standing, allowing traffic to flow and all of that, to how to lay asphalt.
Yeah, there's a little bit of paving going on in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Jeez.
From Los Angeles all the way up to Washington State, I'm
the I-5 corridor.
It's amazing how much videos. I mean, I was looking back through my archives because I save everything. And I'm just blown away in the last 5 years how many videos I've done about the paving industry.
And how much you know about paving.
Well, let me tell you, I can no longer drive past a construction zone without going, ooh, that's a mill and fill they're doing, or whatever it is. It's really hilarious, the things that you learn. And there's all kinds of industries that we end up getting all these insights to. But it's great fun, and I do love doing it. Stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, bringing life to it. That's the thing. It's not just a matter of droning on about this stuff that you know, you've got to remember there's somebody there listening for whom this is really important. I mean, they need to know this stuff. So,
right.
And
it's usually written by somebody who's a technical writer or something like that. And bringing that to life is a real, real challenge. I remember doing one on operating a drawbridge. Mm-hmm. For the State Department of Transportation, and it was like, and the guy's commenting and says, "Can you believe the quality of people that are probably running this bridge?" I'm like, "Let's at least let them watch the whole video, because I do not want to drive over this bridge if they don't know how to run it."
Yeah, right.
So anyway, well, we got lots of questions coming up from our amazing chat room here. Everybody has a question, so that'll probably go on for another hour and a half. But it's time to talk about one of our favorite guys, our sponsor, Harlan Hogan and Voice Over Essentials. So if you can throw up the website there, Georgie, and we can talk a little bit about what Harlan is up to these days with Voice Over Essentials. Got the greatest stuff on Voice Over Earth, especially, you know, the Porta Booth and the Porta Booth Plus, the Porta Booth Pro. We'll talk to Bob about it. I know somebody had a question about doing stuff on the road.
We'll touch on that later.
Yeah, he's got great stuff there. All you have to do is go over to voiceoveressentials.com. The Porta Booth Plus, I've got one of those. I make money with it whenever I go on the road, so it pays for itself if you have to go on the road and do auditions and stuff like that. And you can see they use them in broadcast, and a lot of stations are starting to see the value of these sorts of things. So, you know, I would suggest checking out a Porta Booth Pro. I've got them, you know, George, you've got a couple sitting around. If you have the chance, if you know someone that has one, try it out. It's a great unit, and it, and well built, and he keeps making these things better and better and better. He puts new innovative things into them. So
we
highly recommend you check out the Portabooth Plus and the Portabooth Pro, especially now that the Portabooth Plus has this great carrying case, which I just happen to have over here. Of course, now my entire studio is falling apart, but it's you can get it here. It's the logo's on this side, and it's right side up too. It's got pockets. It's got everything. You can, as a matter of fact, the last time I used this, I actually put my clothes in here too. So it was an overnight stay, but I had to have this.
Yeah, I love how Harlan will make a product, and then he'll do a run because you have to make so many of them, right, and try to sell them, and then
right.
He immediately evaluates what could we do better, and then he comes out with the next iteration. He never releases the exact same thing twice because there's always something that can be done better, you know?
Right. Yeah. The first bags, they didn't really think, well, we'll just sell the Portabooth Plus. Yeah, it didn't go well through baggage. This fits perfectly in a luggage rack. Yeah, and they can throw it around. Anyway, and nothing happens except destroying your own library. So, Harlan, thank you so much for being our sponsor, being here with us from the beginning of East West Audio Body Shop. We're at episode 95. Can you believe that?
No. We're going to have episode 100. You're actually going to possibly be here in L.A. or in California for the 100th episode.
That would be
really
right? Cool. That's true.
It may work out that way.
First week in August, I'll be down there. Mm. Last weekend in July. We'll talk about it.
It might just work out that way. Yeah.
It might. We could take a week off and go, well, we want the 100th episode to be there. We can do that. We're not on a network. We're not waiting for the network news to come out. We can do whatever we want.
That's right.
This is the great thing about the internet.
Freedom, baby.
Absolutely. Anyway, thanks to Harlan Hogan and VoiceOverEssentials.com.
Thanks, Harlan.
Over there, buy his stuff.
Thank you, Harlan.
Thank you.
Man. All right. So, Bob, we got lots of questions here from all these great people here. The first one we have here from one of our great audience members, Karen O'Brien. Can you talk about your daily preparation techniques and warm-ups, et cetera? I mean, now, I just finished a run of Pirates of Penzance, and I haven't done any theater in a long time. One of the great things we did, we had a great music director. And as the call came out, we'd all be out in the, and he would say, okay, and we would start doing things like, puh, 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 and wah, and we were doing all these things. And I forget to do those things some days. What's your preparation technique?
Well, I suppose it's useful to note that my major in college was vocal performance. I was a music major and I was studying to be an opera singer. So, of course, I learned, a number of techniques for warming up my voice and getting ready. I use none of them anymore, honestly. I just, my warm-up technique is I get up, I have breakfast, brush my teeth, shave, and take a shower and get ready for the day, and come down here to the studio and start recording. What I find is, though, that when I begin at the beginning of the day, I'm usually not completely warmed up. So normally what I'll do is whatever the first script is that I have to work on for that day, if it's short or long, whatever it is, I'll go 30 to 45 seconds in, and then I'll go back and start over from the beginning and just lop off the stuff that was at the start, because my voice was still getting into its sort of active mode. After that, generally, I don't have to do anything. I just sit down and talk. Yeah. But, a big piece of that is because I don't do screaming rock and roll ads or car commercials or things. Screaming car commercials, other things like that, that are really stressful on my voice or require me to really warm up to make sure that I don't damage anything. I used to do those years ago, but I don't enjoy doing them. And nobody who wants that pays enough to make it worth damaging your instrument. So I just don't do them anymore.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I mean, if you did one a day when you're in radio, you could probably get away with it. But now I know people who do a lot of car spots, and they sound like they've been chain smokers for a while.
Yeah, years ago, a friend of mine and I had a company where we actually did a lot of ads for rock and roll musicians and that kind of thing. And it took a lot of screaming and hollering and batches of commercials for tours and all of that kind of thing. So I did a lot of that. but that was in the 80s. And like I said, I don't do that anymore.
We talked about your studio acoustics. Let's talk about your equipment. Colby Elliott said, would it be possible for her to ask Bob about his equipment chain? We can see the mic, of course, but preamps, you know, the DAW, or is that too personal, like a secret sauce?
No, it's not. It's not too personal at all. Actually, you know, it's when I was in high school, I remember learning about the ideal amplification is a straight wire with gain. So I try to keep that would be the ideal theoretical amplification, of course, because the straight wire doesn't have gain.
Yeah.
but only loss. But anyway, so it's the Sennheiser microphone to my little Mackie 802 mixer to my through the port in the little piece of PVC pipe that runs through the wall out to my Mackie Profire 610 audio interface to the FireWire interface on my Windows 7 workstation. And from there, I either use Pro Tools or SoundForge.
How do you choose which DAW you're going to use for any one project?
Most of the time, particularly if I'm recording long form, I record in Pro Tools because I really like their audio engine. It's not, I don't have anything against SoundForge, but I also like that if the software crashes, with Pro Tools, you pretty much already have the samples on the hard drive.
Yeah.
In SoundForge, you can lose the work if the crash is hard enough.
Yeah.
I mean, the samples are there, but Pro Tools won't be able to read them back up, whereas with Pro Tools, you almost always do. So for long form stuff, I usually record in Pro Tools, but I do 99.9% of my editing in SoundForge.
Ah.
And that little tiny bit that I don't do in SoundForge, I do actually in Isotope RX.
Oh, and are you using SoundForge Pro or the Lite version?
Yes, Pro.
Did you ever use Audio Studio? I mean, do you know the differences or did you just go straight to the Pro version?
I started beta testing SoundForge Pro when it was not yet Pro. It was version 2.0 of SoundForge.
Yeah.
And I just kept on with them through all of the various versions. And then when I, it was in the about 2001, I started my corporate job involved working for the media department, and the editors there were all using Pro Tools on Macs. And so I, because I was the head of the department, I had to sit in with them while they were editing some of the time. And I began asking questions about how do you do this, that, and the other thing. And eventually I got into a project where I needed to be able to do some mixing. Well, SoundForge has rudimentary mixing capabilities, but you would never want to do anything complicated with it.
Right.
You know, putting two little pieces together and putting a little ducking in and all that you can do in SoundForge, but it's not very simple.
Yeah.
So I bought a copy of the M-powered Pro Tools version 7.1, I think, or maybe 6.9, whatever it was, something back then, with an M-audio interface, and used what I had learned and then just kept teaching myself. So,
how about the headphones? Jennifer wants to know what your headphones are. And do you
these are Sennheiser HD535s. They're open air design. And the reason that I like them, most 99% of the time, if it's not, 100% of the time, if it's not a directed session, either phone patch or ISDN or Source Connect or sometimes Skype, I don't use headphones at all. But the reason I like these Sennheisers is because since they're open air, I can still hear my voice in the room through the open air design of the headphones. It's not like those hard sealed headphones, you know, the Cost Pro 4AAs or whatever that people used to use in radio.
Like
all the time.
I'm using right now.
Yeah.
Which are sealed.
I like to be able to hear myself. And a lot of times I'll just work with one ear uncovered.
Right.
But with these Sennheisers, they're wide enough that when I work with it on one ear uncovered, they'll sometimes slip off my head in the middle of the session. That's a little awkward. Pardon me while I ask you to repeat what you were just directing me on because my headphones fell off
on the floor.
I try to avoid embarrassing things like that, so I just I leave them on. But
Do you travel much?
I do some traveling, mostly on the weekends for visits with family and that kind of thing, and the occasional vacation.
Yeah.
And when I do, I several years ago, I started creating a nest of pillows and occasionally the quilt from the bed, and putting myself together a kind of quasi booth in the room. One time I was in a room that was an absolutely perfect cube. The reverberation in that room was so horrendous. Horrible that I actually had to take two of the covers off of the bed and put them over my head and my laptop, and I recorded underneath there, and that managed to cut down enough of the reverb that I could work.
And you lost 20 pounds in the process.
Just about. It was pretty warm under there.
Yeah, and you take your 416 with you?
Correct. I travel with a 416. My goal is, if things continue to go well this year, I'll get a second 416 so I can have one to travel. I actually have an AT8035 that I use when I'm traveling some of the time.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of a difference in the sound, and so my radio imaging clients and some of my other clients want, if I have to do something remotely, they want it to match as close as possible. Yeah. So I travel with the same audio interface, the same microphone. To try to match things as much as I possibly can. Of course, the room makes such a difference.
Yeah.
So again, I try to make it as dead as I can around me when I'm working, when I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm. Best way to go about that. John Gafina asks, how do you ensure the same vocal tonality for your narration work? Your voice can change from day part to day part.
Day part to day part and day to day. Absolutely, it does. So what I'll do is, I'm working on this long, long, long audiobook project. And what I do is I go back in and I listen to the last and read along with myself in the last 30 seconds or so of the preceding chapter. And when it's done, I punch record and go. And generally speaking, then I'm able. The other thing is, anytime you're working with a condenser mic, which I hope pretty much everybody is most of the time, being the same distance away from the microphone.
Crucial.
This is the way I normally sit because my workstation is over here. And I will be in pretty much this position all the time. I'll occasionally turn my chair a little bit so I can rest one of my arms on my armrest, but my head and my body is staying in almost exactly the same position all the time. I have the monitor at a slight angle, so the reflections that come off of the monitor, it's a 26-inch monitor, go that way around the room instead of straight back at the mic.
And, that's important.
Try to keep all of that stuff as consistent as I possibly can. There's still slight differences, but hey, I mean, from when we began this little interview until now, the quality of my voice has changed a little bit, but nobody's paying attention to that because you're just tracking along with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Jennifer Cranda asks, this is a great question. Who are some female peers of yours that you would recommend people listen to?
In terms of how to do voiceover?
Yeah.
I think it will, how to, maybe as just as an example, as maybe a mentor, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm guessing is the angle of the question.
Sure. Well, I believe that my friend Liz Dineshner is listening, and I would be remiss not to mention Liz. She's one of my favorite people in the whole world, and of course is not only a brilliant and fluent in English, U.S. English, but she's also, of course, fluent in French, unaccented. Melissa Axelberth, I don't know if Melissa's listening, is another person that I admire enormously. I really like Pam Tierney in Chicago. I think she's got a wonderful delivery, and she's particularly good with characters and that kind of thing. Other people that I really like, Kara Edwards,
mm-hmm.
Karen Clark, Lisa Biggs, Randy Thomas. I mean, I could go on for a long time, I suppose, listing all the people that I admire and enjoy. You know, really, you know, go to voicebank.net and go to some of the big advertising agencies and start scrolling through the female voice talent that are on there. And you're going to find a ton of people who will give you great examples of not only great demos, but great performances. And
I usually tell people, if you really want to learn narration, especially female. Listen to Sigourney Weaver do Planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Just
sure.
You can hear the eagles flying by and stuff like that. And usually if somebody is like very abrupt, listen to that. And that usually will smooth them out a whole lot. That's a good example of somebody who can do that kind of stuff. Bob, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Either we're interviewing you, and we've been in some pretty strange interview places together. I've known you a long time, and I really appreciate you coming on our show. And of course, we'll love to have you on again. When you come up with some other stuff that is motivating to our audience, and they sure showed up in droves tonight because they knew you were here. And thanks for being on, and I look forward to seeing you. You're going to be, well, hopefully we'll see you in Texas for FAFCON.
I plan to be in San Antonio in the beginning of October, yes.
I certainly do, too, and I'm looking forward to being there and seeing everybody else there, too. But thanks for being on, and go Pirates, right?
Yes, indeed. they won today, beating the Houston Astros 1-0.
Wow. Baseball, such an exciting sport.
Catch the fever.
It was fascinating.
Catch the fever.
It's all about
thanks,
numbers.
Bob.
And go thanks, Pens, Bob. By the way.
Yes. But, yeah. Can't say the same about my guys.
Sorry.
What are you going to do? Anyway, thanks for being with us, Bob.
Thank you. My pleasure, Dan. Thank you, George.
You got it, man.
And thank you,
alrighty.
Everyone.
Anytime.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. We'll be right back. We got more stuff to talk about.
See you in a second.
All right.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Hey, honey, the faucet's leaking again.
Later.
Oh, sweetie, the trash smells. Can you take it out?
Later.
Babe, your mother's on the phone.
Later. Ah, cool. Oh, darling, how about a back massage?
Later.
East West Audio Body Shop. Everything else can wait.
Everything else is waiting. Yeah, right in the middle of the interview, my wife comes barging in here, and she's like, yeah. The alarm on your car is going off.
Like, you must have sat on the thing.
I did a butt alarm.
Oh,
so,
no.
The dog's barking. And
it's his. I mean, is it in the garage? I mean, I didn't hear it here.
I apparently the dogs were hearing it, and apparently Marcy was hearing it. So technology, amazing. You know, we can send a man to the moon, but the car just goes off by itself.
I cut the wire on my alarm speaker a couple of years ago. Just so idiotic.
Well, yeah, it's also you have earthquakes there, you know, and I'm sure that sets off every car alarm in Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway. What do we got? We were talking about. Oh, we've got tech update, and we've got a great question tonight. So if you're still watching the show, don't go anywhere.
Yeah, and if you guys have questions,
just as Bob left, you know that doesn't mean you stick around. We got a great question you want to hear.
You know, it's like we kind of got out of the habit of taking questions, you know, on the show, but we do still actually want your questions. Believe it or not, we do want to know what you guys want to know, and we will answer them at the end of the show. And so please chime in if there's anything. But there was one that came in by email. And that question, which is sitting in the inbox that is labeled with the question label.
Good point.
Is right here. From
You're so damn well organized.
I'm trying. We mentioned the promo or the questionnaire, the survey already. So that's good.
Right.
We got a question from Adam Burrell. Who I think is in the chat room. I've definitely seen his name.
I see his name right there.
Yeah. Let's get into this one. Hi, George. I just started listening to EWABS a few months ago, and I love it. I'm a 23-year-old who's just gotten into voiceover. Your show has helped me tremendously with student loans. Your advice on affordable audio solutions has really helped me. Yeah, tell me about that. I know you said to just email you or Dan if you have a question. This is my email. Have you ever picked up radio signals when recording? I keep picking up a radio station when I'm recording, but if I mute the track or turn down the gain, it goes away. Do you have any idea what this might be?
Of course we do.
Thanks. So what do you think? What's your solution?
I always tell this story about when I was doing a remote when I was at the station, and we were doing a remote, I think it was from the county fair or something, which was right next door to a big transmitter. Hmm. And we start doing it, and I'm hearing in my headphones the other station from this transmitter.
Nice.
And I'm like, oh, this is not good. And yeah. We're like, what is going on? What is going on?
That's a bad thing when your station's transmitting the other station.
It was considerably bad in this particular situation. Yeah. What causes this is what we call RF, which stands for radio frequency. Yeah. It's always RFI. There. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eye for interference.
Interference, right. You know, it's, you know, unless you really want to listen to it, which case it's not interfering. But right. But what it does is your mic cable can sometimes act as an antenna.
Right.
And it has to do with how well things are grounded. If things are in phase, things are grounded properly, you have the properly shielded cable, the RFI will not penetrate through the shielding on the cable, and you won't get it. It's an indication of you've got a loose connection somewhere.
Yeah. Well, another thing is balanced audio cables. There's a reason why a mic cable that we use for professional mics has three conductors. There's basically a hot plus and a minus, and then a ground. And so what happens is if noise gets into that signal, into that cable, it's getting into both the plus and the minus together. And what happens is at the end of the other end of that cable, why it's called balanced, is the two signals are inverted and stacked on top of each other. And what that means is that if there's noise on both plus and minus, when they are added together, the noise gets canceled out. The noise is out of phase now, and it gets canceled out. So if you do get noise, it may be also that one of those conductors in your mic cable is broken, so the signal is no longer balanced. You can actually still get phantom power to work sometimes, depending on which one of those wires is broken. So that can really throw you off. So another thing is use the shortest possible mic cable. The link between the microphone and the preamp is the weakest link in the studio, because that signal from the mic to the preamp is extremely low voltage, like really low signal. So use the shortest cable you can. And if you do have a preamp that's separate from the rest of your equipment, put that close to the mic. So you have a short cable to the preamp. And if you have to go a long distance, then run a long distance from preamp to the rest of the equipment, because then you're sending a really high line level signal. So.
Right. As long a cable is, in, you know, as the wrong run goes, you don't want to have lots of extensions on there and keep plugging them in, you know, and because the more wear you put on each one of these cables, the more apt they are to develop grounding problems like we were just talking about, maybe a bad connection or something along those lines. Yep. But George and I are in complete agreement on that one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Bad wires.
Absolutely. Usually it's either a bad wire or just even a dirty connection. If one of those pins or sockets that the pin goes into is slightly dirty, not making a good connection, that can act as though a connection is broken. Well, what's a long distance? In a home studio, a long distance would be maybe 30 feet.
That'd be on from one side of the house to the other.
Well, that can happen. Just the other day, I had to rig up somebody with a long cable because their closet was on one side and the desk was on the other side. So we had to go all the way around. Hey, it's our neighbor's dog. Right on cue. Jeez. Thing is loud.
Is he in pain?
Yeah, that
WTF.
Happens.
Yeah,
I mean, that happens every time he leaves and leaves the dog there. Long distance, I mean, in the world of live sound, a long distance can be 300 feet. So that's why they use preamps down on stage and push the sound up to the stage instead of trying to pull it from the front of the stage. Anywho.
Lots of dog interference tonight, actually. That would be DI, dog interference.
Did the dog on my end make the dogs on your end start barking?
No. But they were barking earlier.
See, that's why you don't use studio monitors on your end. Because this dog can make your dog start barking. Oh, man. Well, the tech update for the week. You know what? There wasn't a whole lot that really, like, made me go, whoa, this week. You know, there was the Google I.O. conference, which those in the tech community that love this stuff, you know, they were announcing new features in Google's world. Google Hangouts, Google Plus has all completely changed again. if you guys aren't spending time on Google Plus, check it out. It's a really awesome, like, interface, and it's just a slightly different kind of communication. I don't know, a slightly different level of discourse on Google Plus, I like to say. A little bit more thoughtful, maybe longer form communications. Like, it's sort of like microblogging, I think, that goes on there. And there's also communities.
Yes,
I know Dave Cavassier started one. There's a couple that I'm in for audiobooks and just voiceover in general. Yeah. And, you know, they're constantly evolving that world. Google Hangouts, what was the news thing that really made me go, wow, for Google Hangouts?
Well, the audio was really good.
Well, the audio quality is definitely improving. Yeah, you can put your Google Hangout in studio mode. And so if you're talking to your client on the other end and you're using Google Hangouts, they will hear you in like 128-bit, I think it's AAC stereo or something, which, you know, with no compression, the sound isn't being squashed in any way, and it sounds remarkably good. So you can check that out. Oh, you know, one thing that did pop up, and I don't know how much this applies to you guys, but they added the ability to do remote screen sharing over Hangouts where you can actually control the other person's computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you're in a hangout with somebody, like your mom or your family members or somebody, and you are their tech person, tech support person.
And you know George and I are tech families.
So. Oh, yeah. So if something comes up and you happen to be in a Google Hangout, you can now initiate a control. And it's very, very – once you're in the hangout, it's extremely easy. You don't have to give them a 9-digit number or anything. They just have to say, yes, you are allowed to access my screen and, you know, agree to a little disclaimer. And then that's it. And you can control the screen and everything. So that's pretty nifty.
It is.
Other than that, not a whole lot really like revolutionary that happened in the last week or so in the world of audio tech anyway. So
right. Yeah. Lots of things going on other places. So let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
Just use your VU meter. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the only tech you need to know about right now.
Set your levels well. Do a good job. And if you're doing wide dynamic range stuff with lots of yelling dog barking, that's what I get for leaving my window open. But oh well. You know, it's set your levels conservatively. Give yourself some more headroom so you have some room to breathe when you get a little animated. So
yeah, pot that dog down.
Boy.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it all
up. On that bark.
And on that bark, doggone it. next week, we're going to do another Google Hangout. Seems like we do these a lot because you guys like them. And they're actually great shows if you show up for these things.
Yeah. This is your chance to join us live on the show and just be in, not just in the chat room, but, you know, in participating in a conversation with us during the show live. So
right.
It's a lot of fun.
Right. And, you know, if you've got questions, if you want to be invited in, anybody can watch it because we'll have it on Ustream and, you know, we'll record it for YouTube.
Yeah.
But if you want to participate and be actually in the room with us in the Google Hangout, write to us at ewebshop@gmail.com and say, I want to be on the Hangout next week. And we will be thrilled to have you in there. We had some great people last time and it was a really interesting conversation. And there's some rotation in there. Some people say, I got to go. Somebody else comes in and it's great. So we wanted to invite you to do that. Then on June 2nd, Simon Vance is coming back with us.
Yeah, I know. That was a great get. Catherine, our producer, said, isn't Simon up for a lot of awards, like a whole slew of them? I think he's up for like 9 different awards at this audiobook. You know, I feel like a dummy that I don't know what the
APAC.
APAC?
Yes.
Is it New York?
Yes.
Yeah, that thing. Anyway, he's up for a slew of awards.
He will have won all those awards by the time he signs.
Yeah, he'll be able to tell us what it was like to be on to be in the award show, what awards he won. That should be really cool. Really nice guy, super knowledgeable, and extremely, extremely successful in regards to sheer quantity of audiobooks.
Really?
At the very least, I think he's probably got Scott Brick beat. I don't think they actually compete that way, but I think if he tallied them up, he might actually have more than Scott.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's going to do it for episode 95. And we do it because you guys keep showing up every week.
They said that June 23rd, if we don't skip an episode, they said June 23rd would be the 100th. So June if you're going to be here,
I will be there. I will be here. I'm because we're leaving for on a trip to Europe on the 25th. Mm-hmm. So
you're going to be here before or after that.
I'll be here before that.
So that works out.
It might. No. I'm not going to be in. I'm not going to be in LA till the beginning of August.
End
of July. So we can plan on the 100th show that we were planning on originally that we just completely just popped out of our mind. Remember we were talking about that the other day?
Yeah.
This tight production standards here. We you know, some days it's like, just turn the camera on, let's go. Because why you guys come. You just want to hear us talk.
Yeah, you just want to hear us flap our gums, right? And the 35 of you that are actually left watching, if you haven't done the survey yet, if you have a few minutes to do that, we really would appreciate it. To make it easy, I'm going to put a link on ewabs.com right on the front page as soon as we hang up here because I forgot to do that. So it's going to be on ewabs.com right on the front. Fill out our survey, and we'd really appreciate it. And it is totally anonymous. So
right.
Thank you.
So. Yes. Well, of course, we have all the people we need to thank. Of course, our wives, especially mine, for running in and saying your horn on your car is going off. And Amy for taking good care of you. Her new job working out well?
It hasn't kicked off yet. We're waiting with bated breath for that phone call from the photographer saying, we need you.
On.
Yeah, so.
Great. And, of course, Kathy Curden, who we just mentioned, our great producer and getting us great guests. Anthony Gettig for helping us out in the chat room, too. Jason Lawson and Lee Penny for their production assistance. And you can read those now.
What am I reading now? I'm not even looking at the show notes.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I will continue.
Oh, yeah. We've got a bunch of contributors that are doing drop-ins and all those fun bits that we play. Larry Hudson and Sylvie McClure. Larry Davis and his fiance Elizabeth and Rosemary Benson has also created our announcements jingle.
Even though I didn't hear it.
Yes. I know. We thank you guys and anybody else that wants to – you guys are doing these voluntarily, and it's a lot of fun to hear your little bits. And, of course, we give credit to you every week. So it's a great way to get a little extra exposure out there. So send your stuff in. We'd be happy to use it on the show.
All right. 10:40 here in the East, making it 7:40 there out in George time.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so that's going to do it for us tonight. Everybody have a great week. Practice, and do everything Bob said because that's best thing.
Yep. Can't go wrong there.
All righty. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West.
And together we are East West Audio Body Shop. Take care, everybody.
Good night, everybody.